You're listening to episode 66 of IDRA Class Notes.
Many parents wanted to come to school to volunteer and help raise money, which was wonderful and great. Other parents wanted to come and help paint a wall and do their share. And said, I've got people who can do that. What I want you to do is to help me to encourage your children to do better in school and develop those high expectations. So every year when we raise the bar, the parents were fully aware. They were right there with me. This is what we did this year. This is what we plan to do next year.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Notes podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We'd love to hear your comments about this show. Please let us know what you think about it and any questions you have. There'll be details at the end of this podcast on how to do that. And if you like our show, please help spread the word and tell three others, or leave a review for us on iTunes. On our website at idra.org, you can sign up to receive a free email alert that will let you know when a new Class Notes episode is available. You can also sign up for our two free e-newsletters, Graduation for All and IDRA News. Today, our topic is what parents should know about their school and especially about learning, with Dr. Rogelio Lopez del Bosque. Rogelio has returned to IDRA after having served as principal of Eastwood Academy in the Houston Independent School District for 5 years. It became a model school under his leadership. His professional background includes teaching English, Spanish, reading, and ESL, as well as serving as a reading consultant, supervisor, and assistant director for multilingual programs. He also has taught courses at the community college and university level. Dr. Lopez has a master's degree in educational administration and a doctorate in educational leadership. Buenas tardes,
Dr. Buenas tardes. How are you, Aurelio?
In your current work with parents, Rogelio, I know you're doing a lot of work now. What are the key questions you're dealing with in your work with them?
Well, the first thing I'd like to emphasize, Aurelio, is that I'm constantly amazed when I do training with parents of how little they know about what's going on in the school and actually how much their children should be learning or what they should be learning. So I have made it a point of making sure that they actually get to know those things that they don't know. So in looking, and you are fully aware of the fact that the effective schools research talks about that effective partnerships with parents is very, very important. And not only do we work with that, but we work with parent engagement. It's not just about involvement, but it's about parent engagement and partnerships, because we're looking now at the parents helping the schools to work with the children. The questions that I ask and want to find out from the parents are actually three, but I'm going to extend it to a fourth one. This is based on DeFore's professional learning communities, which I was trained in a few years ago. But these are very good questions that we can ask, and it is amazing how little the parents know. And if they don't know, I'm hopefully giving them some information as to what to look for. The first question that I ask is basically, in professional learning communities, is what is it we expect students to learn, which is basically the curriculum. And when I'm turning that question, I turn around to the parents and I ask them, do you know what your child is supposed to learn right now at this grade level, at this time of year, in this content? Again, it has to do with curriculum. The second question that professional learning communities ask is, how will we know when they have learned it? Which, of course, has to do with assessment. And what we're looking at is, when I make this question, I ask the parents, how do you know if your child is learning it or not? Simply because he brings an A at home does not necessarily mean that the child is learning it. So these are questions that they can certainly ask the teachers, the school. So my question to them is, how do you know if they've learned it? Now, the third question in professional learning communities has to do with, how will we respond when they don't know it or when they don't learn it? And which is, the response should be the support that we're supposed to give the child. So the way I'm asking the parents to ask is, what is it that we can do together to help the child when he or she does not learn that specific area?
You said you added a fourth one.
Yes, I added a fourth one, and I'll go into that in just a second. But I want to make sure that the parents realize, I emphasize what is that we can do, because this really will engage the parents. And, of course, the research is very clear. It tells us that parents do care, they do want to get involved, and they do certainly want to assist the school.
It seems you're working from a different paradigm than the one that the parent involvement is volunteerism, raising money for the school,
exactly.
Being a chaperone on a field trip. That's what has meant in some schools, right. Parent involvement. You're talking about something different.
Yes. This is very important. It's critical. It's important because the school needs their assistance in those areas. However, now we're talking about how is it that the parents can get involved to help our children, all of them, and will help the process
but
as well.
But it's focused on academic achievement.
It's focusing on academic achievement and accountability as well, which I think is very, very important. So my last question is, so if they've learned it, how will we respond when they already know it? Or when they learn it? So how do we respond to that? So the parents, I ask the parents, how will you be responding, or how should the school be responding when your child already knows it, or when he has had difficulty with it and then he is able to learn it, and what do you do then? So those are the three questions, major questions that I ask. And I make sure that the parents are made aware of or know how to seek information in terms of what their child should know at that grade level. Let me give you, for instance, one of the things that I have gone over with parents at the elementary level are the TEKS. And I think that's a very important piece of paper because it tells them by grade level and by content area.
TEKS in Texas is the curriculum goals.
These are all the goals or the skills that a child should learn throughout the year,
right.
For that particular grade level.
And all content areas have particular
all content
targets,
areas
yes.
have them. However, you know, in the TACS, which is the major assessment, is the one that tells us whether they have mastered that skill or not, and they're not all tested. And what I want to make sure that the parents understand is all of this is cumulative, in particular at the middle and the high school levels, because every year they're going to vary,
right.
And what they were taught one year, they will test a lot of that stuff, but not necessarily all of it.
Right.
So I may be referring to a previous...
So how do parents react when you give them these questions?
Well, basically, they say, I didn't know this, and the first thing is, how can I get involved?
Now, let me just ask you, if I'm a parent that speaks little English, I have very little education, can I understand you tell me what my child is supposed to learn? Do you think I can
cooperate? Absolutely. Well, of course, if I communicate with you in Spanish, certainly, and I think that's critical. And it's not
negotiable. The content is still complicated,
The
right?
content is complicated, and we're not expecting the parents to teach the content. We have teachers who are certified, mm-hmm. they're experts, and we need to value that, and we do value that. However, the parents can make sure that the child is doing his or her work, that they're completing their assignments, that they feel comfortable enough to be able to tell them that they don't understand, so they can mm-hmm. go back and talk to the teacher to work on this. Work on these areas that they have deficiencies.
You mentioned the TACS. You know, in Texas, one of the biggest problems has been algebra. The sophomore year algebra was where schools have gotten in trouble. They're not making adequate yearly progress.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying parents should understand something about the algebraic concepts or something?
Not necessarily that they understand the algebra. Well, some of them will and do, but
yeah.
that they understand what is being taught.
Okay.
And then if they do not know, If the student has not learned, then what is it that we can do? So the parent has options. You know, they can get tutorials. They should be able to ask the teacher, what is it that is being done to support the learning of my son?
Okay, so if I'm a parent and my son is a sophomore and I get a note saying, your kid has a 50 in algebra,
mm-hmm.
he's not making an algebra, then what should I do as a parent?
Well, as a parent, I think you have every right to set up a meeting with the teacher and know specifically where the deficiencies are, mainly because it's not always the fact that the child may not understand the concept. It may be a lack of language, and if we don't have any modifications for that child, who may be he may be a student, an LEP student mm-hmm. who's being monitored, then we need to make sure that he or she gets the appropriate instructions.
When you were a high school principal, did you have conversations like this with the parents?
Absolutely, absolutely,
and
at all times.
And not necessarily in content areas that you were knowledgeable in, but if they had trouble in social studies, science, you still sat down and
absolutely.
Talked.
Now I didn't know the mm-hmm. I couldn't remember all the concepts or all the contents. However, I did make sure that when I did talk to a parent, that I had the teacher are the teachers involved in this whole process? Because I would serve as a translator as well, but also explain.
Now, you had parents that were poor, that didn't speak English. Some of them were recent immigrants. How did they receive the information?
Well, first of all, once they started feeling comfortable in coming to school and knowing that the people in the front office were going to welcome them and treat them with the respect that they are due, and that I was always available and kept an open door policy, then they're more than willing to do what was necessary to help their children. Parents do certainly care. I don't think that there's not one who does not. And in this particular case, my parents didn't speak English, that was all. There was nothing wrong with their abilities, and I keep saying, my parents do not speak English, they're not stupid. Therefore, they want to be a part. They can assist. They can help. However, what was also very important is that the teachers that we worked, that were at Eastwood, and the teachers, the parents also need to know that we work collaboratively. Teachers have to work collaboratively to meet the needs of the children, the specific needs of the individual child. And again, whenever we're, you know, through the professional learning communities, I also let the parents know that we have to change our focus from teaching the content to really teaching the child, which means we almost have to individualize the instruction at times, in particular when they're not passing.
I tell you, when I was a high school English teacher, I had to change my point of view from being an English teacher to teaching, because when you have juniors in high school, you're departmentalized and you're thinking that way. Let me connect this to something that we use at IDRA and that you're using. We have something called a school holding power portal. It's an online access to information about a particular campus. How have you been using it to help parents, you know, delve into the status of their campus?
Well, it's amazing, Aurelio, because even working with the early childhood programs at the elementary level and, of course, the middle and high school levels, when I show them what the disappearance rate of students from the study that was done by Fuller, they're absolutely shocked to see how many students have disappeared and where are these students. And the major concern that they have is that I hope that my child does not become one of these numbers or statistics, because they are concerned.
What is the kind of information that wakes them up or shocks them?
What wakes them up, first of all, is when you refer to the number of students that have disappeared by ethnicity. First of all, they're shocked at the numbers for the entire school, because we focus in on the individual school. And even though we're talking to elementary parents, how is this going to impact their children?
Their children are going to be there eventually.
Exactly. Yeah. So the whole idea is, when they see this, is that what is it that they might be able to do now in order to get more engaged and involved in the school, so that it'll make a difference for their children when they get to that level. So
now they want their kids prepared for college.
Absolutely.
Now, have they seen, like, some of those campuses have very low scores of kids even taking the SAT or the ACT?
I sincerely feel, Aurelio, that basically parents don't know about these exams. They don't know about the SAT. And I know that when I was a principal, we were required to administer the PSAT to 10th and 11th graders. But it was used as part of our assessment as a school and as a principal. However, I made sure that the parents, the school made sure that the parents were fully aware of what the scores meant.
Okay. Well, you had a significant number of kids that by a different lens, people would say they were not college material. And your last year there, they all ended up enrolled in college by the time they graduated.
Absolutely, absolutely. Every year our numbers for college readiness in English and reading and math continue to grow, and to the point that we had 100% graduation and almost 100% going to college.
And what was the parents' role in that?
The parents' role was very, very important. And let me tell you what happened is many parents wanted to come to school to volunteer and help raise money, which was wonderful and great. Other parents wanted to come and help paint a wall and do their share. And I said, I've got people who can do that. What I want you to do is to help me to encourage your children to do better in school and develop those high expectations. So anytime, every year when we raise the bar, the parents were fully aware.
And they were there with you.
They were right there with me. This is what we did this year. This is what we plan to do next year. But the staff was part of it as well.
Okay.
The teachers no longer were working in isolation. They were working collaboratively because, you know, we were all participating and making sure that we were teaching writing skills, that we were teaching vocabulary, that we did math and science and math, and that we did science in math and science as well.
Okay, I want to review those questions. I think they're critical, those four questions. Why is it important that parents know what is expected of the children to learn? Why is that important?
First of all, that will give them an idea as to what the child should be learning at that time. Mm-hmm. Most of the parents don't, they right. know that they're going to school, but if the parents know that they're supposed to be covering additions or subtractions in math at that time, how is it that they can support them, and they need to see, did they learn it or not?
And in the next question, how did your parents at Eastwood High School know that their kids did learn something? How did they find out?
They found out not because they came, many of them came to talk to the teachers, okay? Okay. But I had periodic
beyond
meetings.
Beyond the report card, beyond the paper.
Beyond the paper, yeah. Yes. Beyond that, we had periodic meetings with grade levels, parents of different grade levels, to let them know what the scores were about.
And when their child wasn't learning, what did you counsel those parents?
When the child was not learning, or even when the child was not doing his or her work, we would do interventions. And an intervention consisted of a teacher reporting a child, the teachers getting together and having a meeting with the child. But it wasn't to sit there and make him feel bad or argue with him or to anything other than to let him know what he is doing now, and to give him a plan, how he make a commitment of what he's going to do to improve in those areas, and we'll give him a time frame. Okay. And if that didn't work, then this one, when we call the parents, we would show that respect for the child to try and do it.
So
on
before
his
you
own.
Call the parents, you would have a meeting with him. Okay. Now, I'm curious about the fourth question, because you had it set up so if a kid wasn't doing well, you'd get tutoring, you'd talk to the parents and all that, but then if they already knew something, then what was the implication?
Well, the implication there is that many of them passed their tax and they did very well. But we actually provided more courses so they could expand and so they could be challenged, rather. That's a more challenging courses in the area of math. But these students, we were pushing towards getting commended scores.
Right.
Many of them made commended scores. Those who did not make commended scores, we would push to make commended scores. But then again, that also helped them to, by the time they were juniors and seniors, to take some of the dual credit courses that were offered by Houston Community College.
Because the Texas Assessment of Knowledge and Skills,
yes,
that's the Texas required test. That's a minimum test. So you were pushing beyond that.
We were doing, actually, you know, we had to do the Stanford 10. We had to do the tax, but we also allowed the students. The students started testing with the SAT as far as the 10th grade. In summers, I would contract with the University of Houston to do summer training for the SAT, and it was amazing that within 3 or 4 weeks' time, there was a difference in the pre-test to the post-test of a difference of as many as 300 points. So we were very lucky that we got plenty of vouchers so that students have an opportunity to take those two or three times. And, of course, the higher the score, the better off they were going to.
I'm a little bit biased, and I did work with you over that period of time supporting the parent involvement, Rogelio, but I just wish more principals had that point of view. And now you're wearing the hat as a parent facilitator. These are great questions, and I'm glad you're with us, and I'm glad we were able to share this information. Please give us your comments, let other people know, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.